Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can support us on Anchor. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website, www.16mmfilmcrew.com. Okay, so this week we are talking about Saltburn. Here's your synopsis. A student is invited to an eccentric classmate's estate for an exciting summer. And this film stars Barry Keoghan, Jacob Elordi, Rosamund Pike, Richard E. Grant, Allison Oliver, Archie Madukwe, and Carey Mulligan. And it's directed by Emerald Fennell. Dale, thoughts?
Look, when I walked out of this movie, I was blown away. Like I said before, like, Emerald Fennell is like, she is like on their level. Like, this is two Batman projects where she's like knocked out of the park. She's like one of those directors who I think the industry needs to keep an eye out for. Like, Barry Keoghan, I hope I'm pronouncing his name properly. That dude is crazy. Does some off the wall stuff in this movie. Like, his level of conniving and skeeviness was off the charts. I'm happy now he's getting more of a prominent push as an actor in the limelight, because he had like bit roles in, you know, The Eternals, you know, and he also had a scene in what's that movie with Colin Farrell?
He was in the crazy movie. Irish.
He was in the movie, but he didn't have like a big.
He was a supporting part.
Yeah. So this is like the movie where he's actually carrying a lot of it, and like there's a wonderful drop throughout it. Like, there are scenes, some of the things he do, everybody in the audience was like, "Nah, he ain't gonna do that," and I was like, "Yeah, he is." And 10 seconds later, like, he would. Like, yeah, this movie was like a crazy, weird ride watching.
Yeah, so I hated this movie. couldn't hate it more. After The Adults with Michael Cera, which we watched a few months ago, this is the worst movie I've seen this year. Like, I truly really? Hated this movie with every ounce of my being. I was sitting in the theater, like, actually not trying to throw up. Like, I was actually gagging. And I think it's because I didn't know. Well, this is not the only reason, but this is one of the reasons. I didn't know what this movie was going to be about. Like, I think when I watched the trailer, I thought it was going to be like, oh, it was going to be like a murder mystery type of thing. Like, someone will die in this old English country house. And I was like, oh, exciting. I'm ready for that. And people die, but like, Emerald and the, I want to be here for the girls. Like, I want to be a champion for the girlies who are out here making films. But this film was not it for me. Like, I remember I told my friend I was going to go watch it, and she was like, oh, and I was like, yeah, I know the reviews have been mixed, but I'm going to go watch it. And now I know why. Like, this movie to me was like simultaneously like boring, but also like there was so much going, like all the little twists that were happening. And then like, once you know what the twist is, which is kind of easy to predict. Like, once it happens, you're like, oh, okay, I know exactly where this is going. And then it goes exactly that way. Like, this young man is positioning to be poor, like, which is only a rich person could write something like this. Like, Emerald Fennell, her family are very well to do. And so I think that because of that, like, she nailed the rich people being mean part, but like, what she was actually trying to say through, or I don't even know what she was trying to say through this, like, because it wasn't like an eat the rich story, because Barry doesn't care about making a statement or anything of that. He just wanted to be in the position of like having all the money and being in the house, because he wasn't even poor. He's like, what, working middle class? Not even. Like, his family has a nice house. Like, he's very intelligent, got into Oxford. Like, girl, what? I was so annoyed. And then there were certain scenes that happened in this film that I think were like supposed to be shocking for the sake of being shocking. And I don't like that. It was giving very like Sam Levinson, Euphoria season 2, like,
or like the bathtub idol. Scene.
The bathtub scene, the eating out, Miss Thing. those scene, the graveyard scene when he's like,
yeah, that was one of them. Everybody was like,
I just feel like, why is this here? Because the whole thing, the aesthetics of it, and this is, she's a very aesthetically kind of detailed director, even from Promising Young Woman, like the aesthetics and the music were always like on point. Yeah. This film is similar where the aesthetics, how, you know, how it shot, the music, even who she cast in it, like the fact that she cast like Jacob Elordi and Barry, who are like, you know, who Twitter and Instagram are obsessed with, like those are their white boys, like to the point of like who she's casting in this, she knows that she's targeting a very specific audience, like, and also that I'm gonna assume she's going for a very specific thing, which is like for things to go viral on TikTok, like for people to be talking about certain things like the bathtub scene, like the graveyard scene, that like the aesthetics of it will like trend on Instagram. It feels like a very like pointed, like I want you guys to talk about this movie, and I don't, and again it's giving me the Sam Levinson ick, because it's like, just make a good film, like we, or you know what I'm saying, like it doesn't, you don't have to go through all of this just so we'll talk about your movie, like if it's good we'll talk about it. I don't know, I didn't like it, because I feel like it was just really one long as hell. I was like, what? And these scene, and they stay on certain scenes for so long, and I'm like, can we please move on to the next scene? Anyways, but also just like, I don't know what you're trying to say through this, which made it even more frustrating. Like I wish it was just a murder mystery where like all of these people go to this rich, like established old money country house, and like someone dies and we have to figure out who it is. Like I would have much rather that than what I got.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, I love like her subtle hint, if you pay it like in a movie to A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is one of Shakespeare's most well-known plays, kind of about it's like a social and political commentary, you know, dealing with the lives and trivials, the little issues of rich people. So I thought that was a good hint into the movie. And it also, that play also has a large part to do with perception. Like everybody perceived like Barry's character as this poor, know-nothing person, not knowing behind the scenes who's really just as manipulative as any of them. And due to that perception, they did not see him as a threat. Like, he starts out like really obsessive over Jacob Elordi's character, and then that obsession turns like hate and disdain once he sees how his lifestyle actually is, you know, which I really enjoyed that twist. Like, and in the beginning, I wasn't surprised after a while about what he was doing, because I think I saw the screening for it with my friend, and he was like, yo, that his character like changed out of nowhere. And I was like, nah, if you remember in the beginning, he made a whole soliloquy about, you know, him supposedly having mental health issues, which me as a person who's dealing with mental health issues, I did kind of like that extreme characterization that they had for him. I was kind of a bit put off of, but I understood his character arc kind of in a way after that. But I loved it. I love stuff like this. I mean, I can see in a way how it would come off as a very shock value-esque movie. Do like you said, like her mom, him performing oral, her on her period, and I'm lingering too long on the blood on his mouth and stuff like that. Like,
and he put it in her mouth. He put it back in her mouth.
And then the bathtub scene after Jacob, you know, and that kind of thing. And then particularly, like, I think the one that got everybody in my theater was the graveyard scene where I was like, he's not going to do it. And I was like, I bet he is. And everybody was like, no, he ain't going to do it. And then, like, those are scenes that remind me of the communal experience of watching movies and everybody reacting audibly to, like, the strangest, like, almost. It's, like, very much like when Avengers Endgame came out and, you know, Cap has Mjolnir and everybody goes, kind of thing. Like, those gross out scenes made me remember, like, how watching movies is a communal experience because everybody's there reacting at the same time. So, but yeah.
Nobody reacted to my theater. It was just me. Really? No, I wasn't the only person in the theater, but no one reacted. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, why? I just had so many questions of like, why? Like that bathtub scene was the worst. That was the worst for me. Because the other two I didn't really even watch. I was just like diverted my attention because I was like, this is ridiculous. But that one, because I was like, oh, is he like just like trying to get close to him? There's a scene. Okay, I told my friend this, but it's kind of similar. So in Call Me by Your Name, the book, mm-hmm. There is a scene where one of the characters, I don't know if it was Elio or Oliver, they like take a dump in the toilet. And then the other person takes a dump on top of their dump. And they do it because they want to feel close to the other person. And it was a similar thing with this, where it was like, that's what my thought process was. My thought process was like, oh, I guess he's doing this to try to be close to this person who he's obsessed with. But then in the end, when you realize that he doesn't really care about these people, like he actually hates them for reasons I'm not really sure why, maybe because they're just wealthy or something. That brought into question what all of those scenes were about for me, because I was like, okay, so why did you feel the need to do that? Because in my head was like, if you wanted to have a scene where like he gives him head, you could have. Like you could have, this is an erotic thriller. Like you literally could have done that scene, but they didn't do that scene. What they did is have this young man like slurp up someone's, and it wasn't even a comp. It was the fact that it was dirty bathwater. That's the thing that got me. I was like, you know how nasty bathwater is after you take a bath? Like it's disgusting. Unless you showered before, like that's all your dirt in there. Plus the thing that you produced at the end of that. Like, so I was like, that's just nasty. Like, look, come on.
I have a rule against kink shaming, and I had my limits in this movie.
Is that a look, kink? I didn't know that.
That was is a kink.
To drink
have you never heard of people actually spending on money on buying people's bathwater? It's a legit thing.
What?
Yes.
Oh, see, I didn't know all that. And I watched some crazy people say some crazy things. I didn't hear about that one. This is new.
No. Like, so how his character changes is basically he's initially attracted to Jacob Lloyd's character, but his attraction devolves into like hate and spite against his family after the interaction with their mother's friend, and it's kind of almost like that, the dinner scene where they're all talking before she leaves, and how she's talking about how she found a place, and she's like, oh, I can stay for a while, and they're all like, no, go. Like, they kind of view these people as pets. It's almost like Dinner for Smucks in a way. Okay. Like, oh, we take pity on these people, you know, to make ourselves feel better. Like he said, oh, I hoped you were like the person I brought here last year. In other words, I'm only doing this for shits and giggles to seem nicer than I am. And it is through that dinner he realizes, oh, these people really do not care about me at all. And then that starts this downward turn of how can I get revenge on these people, you know? And that also turns more into his hate, which evolves from after, you know, trying to get the cousin, the black cousin out, and then after that dealing with Jacob Lloyd's character actually finding his real parents and stuff like that, losing that bond. Like that bond, like after he loses that emotional connection, then it flips like, oh, I'm just gonna go kill everybody in this household and claim wealth. And it's a weird movie because it's a slow plan. Like he kills Jacob's character, then he kills his sister, then he gets the nephew removed from the will, and then the husband dies mysteriously, and then he marries the mom, and then the mom, like, it's a long plan for him to get revenge on all of them.
And it's dumb. It's so stupid. Like, because to me, if you're playing the long game on this, because before we even get to Saltburn, he's lying already about his economic status, right? He's already telling people not only does he not have money, but his parents are drug addicts. Like his dad, he's lying about a lot of stuff before we even get to the country home. So yeah. I'm like, so what was your original intent? Was your original intent just to get close to these people? And you only knew that the way that you were getting close to them was to pretend to be poor? Like, to me, like, that's a, I must have money in order for me to know that.
Yeah.
Or maybe poor people know that too. I don't know. But maybe that's like the scam they're running. But again, since he's not poor, it's like, what are you even doing? Maybe like, his life would have been fine. He had a fine life. Like, his parents were nice. He's in a great school. Like, what do you have to be mad about? I guess that's just me. That's coming from my experience of like, you literally have everything and you still want more. Like, yeah, something is wrong with you.
Yeah. I mean, everybody needs a lot. And that's one of the things, like when I say the person with mental health, I wish they had dug more into as to why he's, you know, his lie is elaborate. Like, you know, is it a bipolar disorder, that kind of thing? Like, why is it gone to the extreme and it's gone? Like, beyond his obsession with Jacob Fury's character and his family and their wealth, like, I can understand that, being spiteful over that, but the whole initial impetus of I'm pretending to be poor and stuff like that, that I do have issues with.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm trying to connect the dots here, you know, and I'm just having a hard time because this movie also feels like an offshoot, a downgrade of like The Talented Mr. Ripley, like where someone sneaks in and tries to like claim everyone and then ends up killing everyone. And to me, I was also watching it being like, I would just rather watch Gossip Girl. Like, if I wanted to watch like a bunch of rich people being mean and ignorant, I could just watch Gossip Girl and I would have such a great time. Like, I would have an amazing time watching Gossip Girl. But for this, I just felt like I didn't understand any of his motivations of why he was doing any of it. And then, right, it's at that point where Jacob finds his real parents and he can't keep up the lie anymore, where he just starts to kill people. And I'm like, okay, see, I was waiting for the murder, right? This is what I was expecting. I was expecting a murder. And then when it happens, it wasn't even that satisfying. Like, I was just like, because to me, like, Jacob's character is kind of a villain in his own way. Like, he is rich and he's like playing with people. He's manipulating people too. Like, he knows that he kind of has everything and he looks great, so he can kind of do whatever he wants. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's get some justice for that. You know what I'm saying? To me, this would have worked so much better if he actually didn't have any money, like Barry's character. Because I would be like, okay, that's a clear motivation. Like, you're infiltrating this group of people because you want to tear this stuff down, burn it all to the ground. Like, I'm going to get in with you. I'm going to mess with your life. I'm going to mess with your sister. I'm going to get your cousin kicked out. Like, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to ruin your life. Like, that's what I'm going to do. Like, I would have been like, okay, great. I am on board with that. But that's not even really what happens. It's like he's doing it. He's killing people out of spite or out of, I don't even know what the reason why he's actually killing these people. Just because I guess they're an inconvenience for him to be in the big house and to kind of own everything. So he just has to remove them out of the way. Like, that's kind of what ends. That's the only way I'm like trying to rationalize, like, why is he doing any of these things? It's like, okay, because I don't know. And again, like you said, if they were trying to work the mental health angle, they had to do a lot more work to lay that foundation before they were able to step into actually doing it. Because I just feel like, to me, that's a cop out, and it's not really fair to everyone else who's struggling with mental illness who is not doing stuff like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't try to justify it with that. Like, most people with mental illness are not out here killing people. So, like, what are you even saying? It's, again, what are you saying? That's my biggest issue with this.
I mean, I think the ending point of the movie is where he said it himself to her when she was on the deathbed before he pulled the plug. It was like, you were rich, you saw things easy, and you didn't take anybody as a threat because you were the top predator. And I think that was basically the point of, be wary. It's just be wary, be cautious. And they didn't take anything seriously with the family. Let's just be honest. Let's just be honest. They didn't think anything like seriously at all. So
being cautious.
Hey. I mean, that's it is okay. So the movie is a very eat the rich movie,
but it's it is not though. An it's eat not the rich constructed. Movie is like The Menu. That's an East Rich movie where it's like there is a purposeful intent to bring all the rich people here that we hate. And what happens in the end, everybody dies. He burns all that to the ground, I mean, even himself. Like, you know, all of it's gone. To me, that's Eat the Rich movie, where it's like there's like a pointed, this system is bad, so we have to destroy the system. But that's not what happens here. He gets rid of the people, but he is still in the system, and that's what he wants. Like, he's out here dancing naked in the house. Like, he's loving it. He's living it up, having a gay old time. Like, he's having the best time of his life. So, again...
I mean, look, when everybody, there's a group of people who, when they say eat the rich, they don't mean they don't want to become rich. They say, let's eat those rich people so I can take their spot. That's what I should clarify when I say eat the rich movie. My only critique beyond the, like, I still love the movie, like, amazingly. Like, I love weird shit to a degree. So I'm fine with it. My only thing was A, the mental health portion, and B, like, his murders are like so mad simple. Like, he poisons him and then throws a bottle into the lake. Like, the police in the shirt, like Scotland Yard in the search of a lake. Huh?
Should have been arrested a long time ago.
Like, and then he drugs the girl and like cuts her up in her own, like, their own house in the bath. Like, where, like, no one is ever, like, the cops aren't investigating properly. Like, that's the only thing. Like, him getting away with these murders was sketch. Like, probably after, like, the only one I could probably say maybe is possible is the mother's at the end, you know, because, you know, she gets her and she's a coma and she passed away. But those two murders in the beginning, like, where the cops didn't, like, do their forensic shit properly, you know, so...
And so y'all not going to ask any questions about, like, how this random person y'all don't know just showed up in your house and suddenly people are dying? Like,
at least he could have pinned the murder more so on the, and that's the thing I didn't like. Also, one thing I didn't like about this movie is she did try to force a racial element into it that she did not understand with the black cousin. When you're a white person trying to navigate that space, it comes off really, really... really bad, and I'm thinking he was gonna pin the murders on him, but I'm happy he didn't do that because I don't want to see another nigga go to jail. But still,
like, not her trying to do their racial commentary. Ugh, God, the more I think about this movie, the more I just hate it. Like, because she was trying to put some little spice in there about him being biracial and still being like a hanger on to the family, and the fact that he was the only one who knew the people who served them's names. Like, girl, get out of my face. Like, I was just so, I'm so done with her. Like, I couldn't be more done with her. Like,
look,
you don't have the world experience or the perspective to tell that story. So, like, if you're going to be like, oh, well, we need to have diversity in this movie, then you're probably going to have to do what you did with the rest of the movie, which is just put it in a surrealist kind of frame where racism doesn't exist and just have him be there. No explanation necessary if you're going to do that, because you are not qualified to tell the story. Like, some white people can tell stories, other people's stories. They'll never do it completely right.
Yeah.
People can do it. Miss Fennell, like, it's not you. Like, I'm sorry, girl.
But look, that's always been a recurring thing with British or English or European properties of, hey, we are aware that black people exist in our country. How do we put them in our stories without making it seem cringy? Like, they can't bypass that part of not making it cringy. So, but, you know, it is what it is. And it happens. Like, there are, like, plenty of black kids who are, like, in... aristocrat adjacent, probably in England or something like that, due to those kind of same situations. But, you know, hey,
I don't think like had it with the class. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was. No, you go ahead. Sorry.
I feel like she had it when it came to class. I feel like she understood what she was doing. Like,
yeah.
Because, again, that's her background. So she knows how to talk about these type of things. And for me, it's like, if you're not born into that kind of wealth or you are othered in some type of way, you do a lot, I'm imagining, because, again, that's not my life. I'm imagining that you do more to try to fit in So that's why he was especially mean, like the character of, I forgot what his name was, but the Black character, like it seemed like he was doing a lot to try to bring Barry down. But, and so on that front, I feel like, okay, we can talk about the classism of it all, but like the race of it all, like I just don't think that she even knew how to really display that.
I think his character probably would have been better served. Like, and I kind of figure what she was doing based on the antagonism between both the characters, his and Barry's, the cousins, is because he's very much in both worlds, like lower class due to his race in some ways, but still because of his familial relationship, he's still upper class. So he's supposed to represent that middle ground, and he sees Barry as, how should I put it, as an adversary entering this space, because he understands how hard it is to stay in this position and how much he's had to fight for it. Like he basically says, I can do all this dumb shit, but at the end of the day, I'm still a member of the family. You're not, you know, you're just a pet, you know, kind of thing. So that's where their adversarial relationship and their weird homoerotic relationship also comes from to a degree. So, like, as far as that point, she was very spot on about how usually when, let's be honest, they're with people not of certain statuses, there's sometimes very much a very crabs in the barrel mentality. Let's just be honest. Sometimes, like, if I view some people say, if you're in the same position as me, there's no way you can obtain to hire. I need to keep you below me. And for, like, their dynamic was very spot on with that in a way. So I'll give her credit for that. And now you're also concerned about the homoerotic aspect of their relationship, where that came from as well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think about it until you brought it up again, but it's true. It's the homoerotic, yeah, like homoerotic borderline, like queer baiting. Just get it away from me. Like, just get this away from me. Cause I just feel like there's a lot that she was trying to do in this film, and I don't know if she did any of it successfully. Like, there's a lot of different stories that she's trying to tell, and I just feel like it kind of got muddied. I can't even think anymore about this film without getting absolutely just like, I really spent money, sat in the theater for 2+ hours to watch this. Like, it just makes me mad. The only good thing about this film was Rosamund Pike. Rosamund Pike was giving me life. Like, she was the only thing that was holding on to the entire film. And when she died, I was so pissed off. I was like, damn, like, you had to go. Like, you were the only person I cared about. Like, everyone did a good job. Like, again, I'll say the performances were great. Again, like what you said earlier, I'm happy to see Barry in a leading role. I haven't seen him in a leading role since, what, Killing of a Sacred Deer, when he was, like, doing co-lead with Colin Farrell. Like, he's a great actor. Jacob is doing his thing. Like, Priscilla wasn't all that, but he really gave it everything. Like, he is a great actor. Like, everyone was doing a great job. I just think that this story is maybe one of the most frustrating, disgusting things. And I've seen erotic thrillers before. Like, Fatal Attraction, I love that movie. Classic, great film. Even something that we watched more recently, like Fair Play, there were some issues with it, but I'm like, okay, there's some good stuff in here. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm not against watching movies like this. I just feel like there were certain scenes that you knew. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, okay, yeah, she definitely did this, so people will talk about it. Like, it's like, okay, got it. Mm-hmm. She wanted to try on TikTok. Yeah, got it. Like, that's all I was thinking. I was like, okay, mm-hmm, this is where we're at.
Like, once this movie hits online and you get a, there are going to be a lot of TikToks and a lot of tweets with the bathroom scene with Jacob Eure. That's going to be trending a lot online and pretty soon. But I mean, I like surrealist, off-kilter psychological stuff like that. Like, that's my wheelhouse. Like, I don't like horror for the sake of horror with gore and shit, but I do like these kind of movies, so that's why I still enjoyed it, you know. So yeah,
okay, thanks for explaining that, because honestly, after I watched this, I was like, is Dale okay? Because he was like, I love this movie. It was so good. That's
me. Like, you, if you give me like weird, surrealist horror, like almost borderline gothic, not gothic stuff, but like in that wheelhouse, I'm down for it. But when you give me like Saw, where I'm just cutting limbs off and Texas chains, like gore for the sake of gore, I'm not with it. I like stuff that fucks with my mind, like, which is weird, you know, but I don't know. Those are kind of horror movies I like a bit. So. Hey.
Yeah, I mean, I like a surrealist moment too. Like, I like Killers of the Flower. I mean, not Far of the Moon, Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Sacred Deer, yeah.
Which was really weird. Like, I love those weird movies. I think that there were just scenes in here where it was like, and I'm again just trying to piece the story together. That was another thing for me, like understanding people's motivations and all of, and just like why things unraveled the way they did. What was the point of what was happening? Like, those are the questions I'm going to have when I watch a movie. Like, and also, like, when you make a movie like this, you're not asking the audience to turn off their brain and just enjoy it. Like, you're asking them to be engaged with it. So now that I'm engaging, I have questions, ma'am. And, like, I don't feel like any of those were answered. So, whatever. Like,
I mean,
I don't care anymore. Like...
I will. The best way to explain the movie is basically the ending, where he's going around butt naked in the house, dancing the blood on the dance floor. Because when he goes to like the centerpiece in the center of the house, and you see the little Punch and Judy puppets things, and he has the rocks, all their names. Basically, he viewed them all as puppets. He played them, and that's it. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Moving on from that, of course. A lot of news has come out like the last couple of days, particularly in due to the ongoing conflict in the Middle East between Israel engaging in their assault of Gaza, trying to eradicate Hamas. In the last couple of days, we've seen a lot of stories of talent and agents, talent being dropped from their agencies, whether they're managers or actors. Of course, like, we're in the midst of the revival of, like we said, the horror genre. Of course, Scream 7, one of the lead actresses, Melissa Barrera, was dropped after she posted calling what's going on ethnic cleansing and a genocide. The team behind Scream, I think it's Paramount, correct? Or no, Spyglass. Spyglass kind of said they had a zero tolerance policy, and they dropped her from the project. And she's not the only one. I think Tom Cruise's manager was about to be dropped from their agency, and Tom Cruise was like, "No, if you drop her, I'm leaving." And they kept her on. So it's a lot of, you know, issues with it. And I think part of it stems from, I think a lot of people were wondering why the some people were finding ironic that the Screen Actors Guild and SAG-AFTRA kind of came up to an agreement with the AMPT, and then they put out a statement as soon as possible. And people are wondering why, as a guild, did they try to be a voice for every actor, whereas I kind of see what the Writers Guild, as an organization, has not put out any statements. They're kind of letting the writers speak for themselves, which I think is much as long as it doesn't cross certain lines, wishing, you know, death on, you know, Jews or Muslims, let these people speak their voices. Once it borderlines into violence, then I can see issue as a union or a talent agency speaking up.
Yeah, this is really crazy, because I don't know. I feel like as organizations, unless there's like clear anti-Semitism or Islamophobia or something like that, like, you don't need to make not only statements, but you don't also need to be making actions like this. Like, yeah. You don't need to be dropping people from movies or like releasing them for their contracts from, you know, their agencies. Like, I don't think that that's right to do, because again, like, everyone is entitled to feel how they feel about this particular subject. And it very much seems that like all of the people who are Jewish, who have spoken up for what Israel is doing, they have not been dropped from any of their projects. They have not been dropped from their agencies. So it's a very clear bias. And I think that's the issue. It's like, you're especially targeting people who are speaking up for Palestine. And so it's like, I don't know. I feel like if your principle is like, okay, just don't talk about this issue at all, which I don't think you can even say to anyone anyways, but like if that was your principle, because it's like too delicate or whatever, then you have to have equal treatment for both parties who say things. But if you're just choosing one party over the other, I just think that reflects on these organizations, these studios, these individual people who are like choosing to like really silence people, because that's what you're doing. And Melissa came out in an Instagram post and was just like, yeah, I'm always going to stand up for what I believe in. And I was like, that's great. People were like, we're not watching the next Scream. And I was like, exactly. Like, show them how you feel by withholding your dollars. Like, because that's ridiculous. But this isn't, it's not just this industry. Like, there's multiple industries who have suspended people from school, like kicked them out of their campuses. Like, people have been released from their jobs because of their stance on these things. And I just feel like I don't understand why you would do that, because it's not, I guess from the terms of being like, what's happening in Gaza is terrible. Like, children are dying, people are dying, their homes are being decimated. That is factual. Like, you can't say that there isn't a disproportionate reaction to what is happening in Gaza versus what happened on October the 7th. And I just feel like, even if you mention that, it's like your job is in jeopardy. That's not the way that this thing needs to go. Like, that's ridiculous to me. And I don't know. I guess if you sign certain contracts, you can't sue. But like, if I was in a position, I would. But
and counterpoint to that is like, I think the Jenna Ortega is no longer going to be in the movie as well, which I found that announcement kind of funny, because that Screen move, they were saying she, there's a scheduling conflict between Scream 7, or I don't even know Roman numerals anymore. I hope it's Scream 7, and the second season of Wednesday.
Yeah.
But Scream 7 is not even in pre-production yet. Like, so this is like a year or two down the road where she's like, yeah, scheduling conflict, I can't do it. I think Spyglass was trying to look for a way to massage it by just saying it's a scheduling conflict with what her for Wednesday and stuff like that. So that's two lead actors they don't longer have in this project for this issue. It is weird. Like, me personally, I apologize if it sounds negative the way I do. I know Jewish people have an issue of anti-Semitism by saying it's racist or anti-Semitic to say a certain ethnic group controls Hollywood. But like you said, because there is a clear bias going on in which reaction they're for or against, like, majority of all the talent that's being dropped or have been pro-Palestine, it kind of doesn't help your argument to say, oh, it's anti-Semitic to say a certain group controls Hollywood, when people who are counter to your viewpoint are losing their jobs. So
It's not helping your argument if you want people to believe that there isn't, and that's a conspiracy theory. Like, I don't even want to get into that, but it's just like, it's very clear that like there are a lot of people who feel a vested interest in shutting down people who have anything to say about how the Israeli government is dealing with this issue. And my thing is, like, if you have personal feelings about it, like, that's your personal feelings. Don't put it into action by actually firing people. Like, that just seems like a step way too far. Like, it's not like, because again, it's like, this isn't really about how you feel about it personally, because this is also like a brand, right? Like, this is the Scream, like, Melissa and Jenna Ortega revived that Scream brand. And so you're going to say like, okay, well, we don't want this person anymore to be a part of our film because she has a stance on this issue. Like, I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense for your business, because I don't think a lot of people are going to come see the next Scream one, like Scream 7. Like, they're already saying they don't want to be a part of this, because of what y'all are doing. And Jenna Ortega is not even in it anymore. Like,
yeah, it's worse considering your target audience are the generation of people who kind of do share the viewpoint of your lead actresses.
Yes.
So
great point. That's a great point.
So, you know.
So.
But yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to our next story. The Bike Riders with Austin Butler and Jodie Comer and Tom Hardy lands at Focus Features. So this film is, it's like a, it was a festival film. It was on the circuit. It's getting some Oscar buzz. And basically it was, I thought it was at Amazon, but apparently it's at Focus Features now. They picked it up the distribution.
Yeah, it was originally a Disney project.
Oh, okay.
And then it premiered at Telluride. This past fall. Telluride, I apologize. But and I think something happened where Disney was like, oh, we have no how to market or distribute this movie at all. Mm. And that's a big problem. This movie has, you know, Austin Butler, Jodie Comer, Tom Hardy. You have, it's like homage to like James Dean-esque Hollywood, you know, 1960s, 70s motorcycle gang, kind of, like those kind of things which people really gravitate to when they're watching movies. And you're sitting there telling me, oh, we don't know how to market or promote this project. That's a big red flag as to currently what Disney's whole focus on, which we see across the board nowadays, you know, their whole, all their Marvel stuff. That you really, a movie like that, that Austin Butler, fresh off Elvis, you know, Jodie Comer, Tom Hardy, you mean you can't market that? That's a big red flag. But yeah, it got picked up by new agency shopped it, and then it got picked up by Focus Pictures. So yeah. And it's like the release date is supposed to be for next year. And I think Focus Pictures is handling North America distribution, while Universal Pictures is handling the global rollout. Okay. Piggybacking off of that, I did mention a bit about Disney's, you know, back box office problems. Of course, the latest movie to also misfire for them is Wish, the animated feature, which debuted over the Thanksgiving holiday with about $31.7 million, way below their expectations. I mean, I'm not surprised by it. Like we said, we're coming out of, you know, the strikes, zero promotion for a lot of these projects. And I think also part of it, we've also mentioned a bit about the stuff with Disney Plus or whatever, and somebody made a really interesting point online with the price of movie tickets being about $10 and up, and knowing how all these movies have like a 3 week, almost all to a month and a half release window in theaters, people are like, why am I gonna spend, like, for a family of, you know, four, you know, almost between $60 to $100, including snacks, when I could just wait 3 months, pay that same like $15 on Disney Plus and have my whole family watch it. Which, and I think this is what's Disney Plus has also negatively affected Disney's box office margins, because people could say, I can wait 3 weeks and watch it in the comfort of my home, and still, and it costs less than what it would take for me to go to the theater. So.
Yeah, they massively screwed themselves with this Disney Plus idea. Like, that Disney Plus should have just been where you can watch classic movies, and That's So Raven. Like, that's really what it should have been for. Because, like, all of these shows dropping the movies on Disney Plus within, like, weeks of its release in theaters, like, y'all did not think about this. Like, whoever is the director of, like, creating the content, or like whoever is behind the scenes, you didn't think about it. You didn't think. And I also heard the reviews for this movie was bad. So it was like, yeah.
There's been like an ongoing conversation with the state of Disney animation. Like, the major one was, like, people have been talking about how Hunchback of Notre Dame, how the music doesn't hit anymore. Like a lot of those elements from golden era Disney that we grew up with are no longer there anymore. Like, I think the one of the statements somebody made about Wish was originally the star was supposed to be a star the whole time. It was supposed to be humanized or whatever. But there, like, there is a stark visual and creative change from what Disney was. Like, its rebirth golden era from, like, the 90s to the mid-2000s to what it is now. It's not the same. Like, they are still biting on the nostalgia acts of, like, Cars and Toy Story still. Like, the biggest hit they have is Frozen, and they're making, like, a Frozen 3. Mm. So they have yet to recapture that feeling that they once had. So.
Yep. Okay. Let's look at our last story, which is the Max Looney Tunes cull continues as Warner Brothers removes classic shorts and movies. Okay. So Warner Brothers is still removing things. Great. That's beautiful to know. Okay, the first half of all the classic Looney Tunes shorts were removed in December of 2022. And so alongside the removal of all five Final Destination films, Max is removing the rest of the Looney Tunes shorts, the Looney Tunes show, and the Looney Tunes Back in Action at the end of December 2023. And again, as we've discussed many times about Warner Brothers doing these type of things, there again, there isn't any other like place where you can go see these shorts or any of these shows. Like, unless they give it to someone else, like I know that they've been, there are certain shows that were on HBO that are on Netflix now, like Insecure and stuff. But unless they do that, these don't exist anywhere. And I think that that's the main problem. It's like, where are people going to be like, oh yeah, I did this thing. But you can't see it because, you know, our parent company took it off and it's nowhere to be found now.
Yeah, and this is worse with Looney Tunes because Looney Tunes is that, like we said, like I just mentioned Disney a while ago. Looney Tunes is the franchise that helped make Warner Brothers Warner Brothers. Mm. Like beyond like their shorts, their cartoons and stuff like that. Like I remember like in the early stages of like it's almost like kind of how Turner, like when Turner bought like most of the Hanna-Barbera library, like that was Turner's bread and butter. We're gonna put like that was, you know, Looney Tunes was Warner Brothers things. And it's really sad, like they don't understand how important it is because they trotted out that still same IPs and characters like for the most recent Space Jam movie, which was ass. But you know, yeah, and it sucks because a lot of these movies aren't available in physical medium. Like, you've had directors like Guillermo del Toro and Christopher Nolan lament about the lack of physical media for a lot of these older projects that are lost in time. Like, this is like 30 years ago when I think one of the studios had a fire and all the original copies for a large swath of their library was gone. So now you're at a point where, oh, we were moving these projects server. We're like 20 years down the road, if I want to show my kids Looney Tunes, how am I going to do that? Like, mm-hmm. like things like that. Like, yeah, and it doesn't make any financial sense at all to me at all. So.
Oh, goodness. They won't learn. Yeah. Okay, so what did you watch over the weekend? It was Thanksgiving. You know, did you watch any Thanksgiving movies?
No, I went and saw The Marvels. Wonderful movie. So after watching The Marvels, I did understand as to like beyond like the sexism portions of it, why a lot of Marvel or comic book movie fans did not enjoy it because it's not by and large a very comic book movie. It follows along the vein of Marvel's current attempts to experiment a lot with their projects. Like, at a certain point, Brie Larson turns into, like, a Disney princess, you know, in one of the scenes. Like, they're doing a lot with it, which, if you're an actual comic book reader and fan, comic books do a lot of weird, zany stuff with the comic books. But I do feel like a lot of comic book movie fans are not fans of the comic books. So anything that diverts and crosses genres, they're not going to enjoy. And I also rewatched Mission Impossible 1996. Oh, that movie still goes. Like, that movie could come out today and it will still do numbers. Like, That movie made me realize how long Tom Cruise has like been that this the dude in Hollywood, you know. And I also find it funny, like, you had like John Voight, you had Emilio Estevez, who were also, you know, Hollywood status, and Emilio Estevez like dies like the first 5 minutes. It's if I was around that time and I heard Emilio Estevez was going to be a movie, I'd have the same reaction people had with Chris Brown dying in the beginning of Stomp the Yard. Like, oh, it's Emilio Estevez. I'm about to watch this shit. Oh, he dies like that? Like, I would have been pissed off too. But yeah, that movie, oh my gosh. Like, Brian De Palma, like, that dude was on some other stuff when they made that movie. Like, damn. Yeah.
I didn't watch any new movies. I had to see two movies this weekend, so I didn't watch any other movies. But I did finish watching Derry Girls, and it's a messy show, but it's still very good. I really love that show, and I miss watching it. Like, I miss the characters. They're just, it was really, I think it was pretty well written. But I did watch this video essay by FD Signifier. Great creator. Oh my gosh, all his videos are so good. I've been watching a lot of news, so I haven't been like on my video essay game like I should be, but I'm back in it. And he did he did a video about swirl economics, and this is like the first like comprehensive video that I've seen from anyone who's actually like really talked about interracial relationships, because I feel like it's almost kind of been like a joke or like an insult or something. Like, it's always been, I feel like it's been talked around, but like for someone to like really dig deep into the research, someone who's like very intelligent and well-read, like who knows, who can like cite studies and analysis and stuff, like that was really good to just understand that whole thing and like why it's even a thing in the first place. It was very interesting. And yeah, highly recommend everyone go see that or watch that or just watch any of his videos. I'm gonna go later and watch his videos on Black conservatives. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, I watched that, and I haven't watched it yet, but I am going to watch The French Connection because it's on Max. I'm gonna watch that. That's gonna be my new movie of the week. So I'm excited to see that.
Gotta watch before Max gets rid of it.
Yeah, before they get rid of Turner Classic Movies and all of it's gone. I'm trying to watch all of the classic movies now before they're just, you know, wiped away for all eternity. But yes, we hope that you're taking care of yourselves and doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.